Oh, it is rainy out there. And dads throughout Minnesota and western Wisconsin are saying to their kids, well, you know, we really needed that rain. No drought in our state for the first time in like a year, so that is good news. We'll be watching it for you. If there's anything to worry about right now, it's just heavy rain, as you heard from Paul during the news. And, of course, we'll get you up to Twins pregame starting right at 5 o'clock here. Plenty of show still to come here on Drive Time, and it is Tuesday, and at this time we do DeRussia Eats. And DeRussia Eats is brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board, and we welcome our newest sponsor, Serdix. You can shop online at Serdix.com. We appreciate their support. Our guest today comes from Deerwood, Minnesota. This is like Kuyana Lakes area, right?
Kuyana. No, you got me seeing it.
Say
Cuyuna.
Cuyuna.
Cuyuna Lakes, Deerwood, Minnesota, Crosby, Minnesota, Bay Lake, Kruger Lake, also
God's
surrounding
country.
Areas. God's country, Brainerd Lakes area.
Josh Goolsby is here. He is the owner of Lonesome Pine, the Lonesome Pine restaurant in Deerwood. It's so good to have you here, Josh.
Thank you, Jason. I'm honored. I'm honored to be a guest of yours and honored to be involved and in your same line of everyone that's come before me on your show.
Your story, I think, is very, very interesting because you were a pretty young guy when you were tapped to move from Minneapolis where you were working. Where were you working?
Panino's Restaurant, Joe Sensor's Roseville. Mostly Panino's. Started washing dishes at a restaurant called Checkers when I was 15 years old. Moved into Panino's from 96 to 02 with a proprietor by the name of Chet Kurtz, who was influential, and I owe a lot of my success to Chet.
And so you're working in restaurants here. You're in your mid-20s. Pretty fun time, right?
A lot of fun, a lot of things learned not to do.
A lot of things we're not going to talk about on the radio. I mean, it's just it was a different time and also young around restaurants. Fun time here in the Twin Cities.
Excellent time.
So the year is 2002, and you get a call from your uncle?
Yeah, my uncle and I had been dreaming of being partners in a restaurant together for years and years and years. He's that favorite uncle that didn't have any kids, and he was the favorite uncle, and we were the favorite nephews, and he was in a place to financially back me. We grew up on the same lake that the Lonesome Pine is in, Bay Lake.
Bay Lake, yeah.
The restaurant's been there since 1936 in continuous operation, multiple owners. No relation to our family before we took over, but we coincidentally have been on the lake, our family cabin, since 1936.
Oh, wow.
Spent all my summers up
there. So you remember going there all the time as a kid?
I went there as a kid. I was there in my mother's womb. I was there before I was a thought in them. My grandparents, my great-grandparents. It's the Lonesome Pine and Bay Lake. It's, you know, that's a common story for 30, 40, 50, 60 years of generations of doing the same thing.
So to have the chance to buy a place right on your lake had to be like...
Dream come true. Jumped at it. Dream come true. No hesitancy.
Yeah. So you end up kind of running this, and do you miss the Twin Cities? I mean, you move up there full time, right?
I don't. I mean, that's a great part of the Brainerd Lakes area that we're on. We're only 90 miles away. Yeah. It's an hour and a half. I drive down at 4 o'clock in the morning for every Vikings game, sporting event, concert. You know, I get here when we're allowed, which isn't often enough.
Right.
To experience some of these great restaurants that you have on your show. You know, I know we're going to talk about my three favorite restaurants, and they're not the Spoon and Stables and the Bachelor Farmers of the world, just because I haven't had a chance to get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it's up there. Do I miss the cities? No, it's close enough.
Yeah. So what, tell me about the Lonesome Pine.
The Lonesome Pine. Continuous operation since 1936.
Which is crazy. I mean, you think about, like, how many places are there in Minnesota that have been around that long?
1936 is kind of, I can't even comprehend that, much less our 22 years that we've been there since 2002. 22 years.
That's a long time for you.
I just turned 46. I did it when I was 24. There was a server there. She's our rock, Sherry. She came with the restaurant. She was there for 7 years before us. She's been there for almost 30 years, and when 24-year-old Josh walked in and decided from the cities and decided that he was going to take over the Lonesome Pine, I can't, you know, she still won't tell me what she honestly thought of what was going
to
happen.
I can picture the look on her face, though. Like, it wasn't, I'm so excited to be working for Josh, I'm sure.
But
how amazing.
Amazing. And the whole restaurant is really focused around the social aspect, the experience. I know that you've talked before on your podcast about where do things rate versus atmosphere, service, and food. And I think it was the Baltimore gentleman who said that exactly like that. I don't remember where you put it, but that's what it is for us. It's the culture, the atmosphere, the experience that we provide, then our service, and then our food.
I think that's right. That's how it's not how food critics write about restaurants, but it's how people experience restaurants.
For me growing up, I always wanted to be surrounded by people, always tried to throw parties. I got into a lot of trouble by throwing parties for my parents or immediate satisfaction. I wanted everything and I wanted it now, and that got into me a lot of trouble. But now I can do something for somebody and see immediately a return on it. And that's what drives me. That's what drives me. So the Lonesome Pine is all about community.
Is it more, and we're talking about Josh Goolsby from the Lonesome Pine in Deerwood. Is it, are you a seasonal restaurant in a way? I mean, you're open year round, but do you see that sort of flow of customers once?
Going back to 2002, very much seasonal. The previous owners would close for a couple of months in the winter. We have always been wanting to, our ultimate goal is to be open all day, 7 days a week.
Why is that important?
Just sustainability. Mm-hmm. Sustainability and be there, one, being there for people. The sustainability to be able to have sales all year round is a lot easier to plan than just, when you're getting smashed in the summer. Our July business is, 20% of our annual sales.
Up your year. So that month is that bad.
I mean, it's nuts. I mean, the 4th of July week, we'll do an entire winter's month business.
Wow.
Just insane. So, but
how do you staff up for that? How do you manage that?
With that demand for service comes high school or college kids, teachers. We have a lot of college kids that come back and serve for the summer. We have teachers that come and serve for the summer, but it's tough. I mean, it's tough when you can't, especially from the kitchen aspect, you can't hire a full round staff to have the same amount year round. So that's another reason of year round sustainability.
Who's a better server, a teacher or a college kid?
Well, definitely a teacher.
Yeah.
definitely a teacher or a banker. We've got a couple of bankers that were their second jobs. And
oh, funny.
Sherry's one of them. Kara's another one. And there are rocks. Kara's been with us for the beginning, and I mean, 22 and 30 years almost. There are rocks.
When people think of going to, like an up north lodgy kind of feeling restaurant, is it like, do they come with sort of the expectations of like, I want a prime rib, or I want a walleye, or what from a food standpoint, like, do people bring their sort of memory type expectations?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, some people will tell you they haven't looked at the menu in 40 years. Right. That's habitual, and that's comforting, right? That's not comfort food, but that's comforting behavior that I'm going to the lake for this time, and maybe for a lot of them it's one specific week, and I know I'm going to Lonesome Pine, and I know I'm going to have the Bay Lake Pizza, the prime rib grilled cheese, Josh's prime rib, Bourbon Street pasta, these things that, they work for all year long, and then it comes summertime to come up there, and they're like, I got my Lonesome Pine fix.
When you look at how you've put your stamp on this restaurant, when you look at a restaurant that's been around so long, that is so much a part of the community there, what are there things that you've done that you're most proud of?
Our service and our care for our customers. It's family. I mean, we for lack of a better description, but the easiest description, we want it to be everybody's cheers, right?
Yeah.
We want it to be everybody's their place, and it is, and we recognize that. And I tell new servers when they coming in, you better learn the menu, because our customers are going to know the menu better than you. They're coming in and they're ordering the same thing over and over and over again for years and years and years, and they know what questions that you should be asking for them. So we expect a lot from our servers.
Do you teach someone to be a good server, or is it sort of in you person?
No, I mean, you gotta have the desire. You gotta have the something in you that says, I care about I care about people, and this person isn't just a dollar sign to me. I tell our staff, this is our house. This is our house tonight, and we're so honored to be having guests come in to spend their discretionary income with us, and to and to make us to give us their money.
Yeah.
And we're honored. It's our house. It's we're,
how'd you learn that?
From Chet Kurtz. I was 18 years old. I had transitioned, or maybe 20. I had transitioned through the kitchen, through the prep cook, through the front of the house, through cook, restaurant manager, and Chet was so good at it. Chet Kurtz has passed now, but Panino's restaurant on 96 and 49 in technically North Oaks on the border of Shoreview, Chet would go and greet, talk to every single table. And as an 18-year-old, you know, Chet would take the night off and he'd say, Josh, you go talk to every table tonight. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what in the world do our guests want to hear from me?
Yeah.
But I did it. And that is the one greatest thing that I've ever learned, is to go out and talk to every table. I walk around and talk to tables and, hey, how are you guys doing? How's your experience? Josh, it's great. Never had a bad meal here. My immediate response is, you're going to. You're going to. You're going to come here 100 times?
Yeah.
Just give us the opportunity to make it right. We're just human. Something isn't going to be right. Your steak's going to be overcooked. The server got the wrong food. Just give us the opportunity to make things right. We're human.
Josh Goolsbee is with us. The Lonesome Pine is the restaurant in Deerwood. Listening to Josh talk, don't you want to just get in the car and go to the restaurant right now? I mean, this is the passion and the service. This is what all of us want when we go out.
I love it. It's so much fun. You shouldn't be, unless you're a chain and you have multiple revenue streams. If you're a single operator of a single restaurant, if you don't love this business, it's not worth being in. It's not for you. You got to love it. You got to love it. We breathe it. My staff is my family. Our customers are our family. We spend more time with them inside those walls of Lonesome Pine than our own families.
All right, let's break. I want to talk a little bit about kind of what it's like running a restaurant in Minnesota right now. A lot of these issues that our listeners are worried about, whether it's tipping, whether it's policy, some of those things. We'll talk about that when we come back. And Josh is going to unveil his three restaurant shout-outs as well. Good stuff with Josh Goolsbee, Lonesome Pine Restaurant in Deerwood, right on Big Lake?
Bay Lake.
And maybe I'll learn how to say Kuyana. Say it. Say it
Cuyuna.
Right.
You got me frazzled. Cuyuna. Cuyuna Lakes.
Cuyuna.
Mountain biking. Cuyuna, which is...
It's all the mountain bike place.
It's all the mountain bike. It's revived the community.
It's an amazing success story up there. Good stuff. All right, 421. DeRussia Eats brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board and Certix Liquor and Cheese Shop when we continue. The Lonesome Pine is on Bay Lake, Brainerd Lakes area. The owner, Josh Goolsbee, is with us here on DeRussia Eats, which is brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board and Certix Liquor and Cheese Shop. You know, Josh, we were just talking about being on a popular lake. How hard is it, you know, to sustain a business? You guys have been doing it for so long. But you think about any family that has a cabin on a lake that becomes hot, it becomes difficult to stay.
Absolutely.
You get priced out of it.
Priced out of it.
Is that happening in sort of the lakes area of Minnesota to restaurants?
Absolutely. Garrison, Minnesota has lost two big restaurants that were a draw to the community, the Y Club and the Blue Goose in Garrison. Blue Goose, famous. Blue Goose turned into something else, and Garrison has never been the same. Bay Lake had the White Hawk. Now it's my buddy's cabin, and we miss it. And it's just property taxes, food prices, labor. You just get priced out. It's hard to make it for the amount of hours that you have to put in.
Yeah, it. I think people, and obviously all of us who eat out, you see the fact and you read it in the inflation reports that, you know, food prices are up 22% or something to eat out. But you guys, it's not because you're getting rich on the deal. Like, you guys are getting squeezed.
No. People like to come in July and say, wow, Josh, you got a gold mine. I'm like, come in November and December and January. And then sure, if we had July business year-round, yeah, we'd be doing really well, but we don't. And the restaurant industry is super thin margins. Return on sales, you Google it, it's somewhere in the 5 to 10%. I mean, that's a tough business.
There's no margin for error, really.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Labor cost, the biggest driver right now, or food cost?
Labor. And it's a can of worms, but... Yep. Specifically with Minnesota being on the front of the house, the servers, you know, there's always been this disparity in it, and it's tough for people to talk about. It's always like, shh, let's not talk about it. The front of house compensation and tips versus the back of house. And Minnesota being one of seven states in the nation that doesn't have a tip credit. That means that we have to pay our servers who make a very good amount of hours per tips, which can be documented via credit cards.
Yep. Now we know for sure.
Everything
right?
is credit cards.
Yep.
But you could if we had a tip credit, hypothetically, you could tip them. You could pay your servers the federal minimum wage of $213 or somewhere in between the $213 and $1085.
Yep.
We have to pay them the full $1085. I'm all for a high minimum wage. I'm all for people making their money. But if I can document they're making well above the minimum wage, I should be able to slim that down and funnel that towards the back of the house or non-tipped employees. That is hurting restaurants around, and now you're seeing places put kiosks in places of servers, putting Servi the robot in places of servers. And I think that, because we're one of seven states, is one of the main reasons.
Yeah, I think when restaurants were sort of lobbying to change that years ago, it was back when Tom Emmer was running for governor. I think restaurants sort of screwed up the way they told the story. It was more like fine dining restaurants were coming out, and no one really feels bad for a fine dining restaurant.
Sure.
But our neighborhood restaurants, what people don't understand is, you like here in Minneapolis, a server is getting paid $15 an hour, which, you know, I think $15 an hour is a reasonable minimum wage.
Absolutely.
But should you get $15 an hour plus
your full tips,
$40-$50 an hour more?
Shh, don't say that.
No, I don't think so. And it makes it very difficult to run your business.
Then on top of that, there's a no tip pooling law in Minnesota.
Right.
I can't require my servers to tip out. I love our family. I love our server family. They're generous. We are always trying to make it work and funneling money to the non-tip staff.
But it's,
and they do that voluntarily.
It's voluntarily.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just important for people to know this
it's
is
hard.
Going on.
I think,
feel however you want to feel about it, but it is the reality.
Yeah. I think the only option for long-term success is going to a non-tipped establishment if the laws are going to stay they are.
Yeah.
Non-tipped, figure out how to put the gratuity into the bill and allocate it how we want to allocate it.
Yeah. Josh Goolsbee is from the Lonesome Pine. Josh, before we go, I want to get your three restaurant shout-outs.
Well, we don't get a chance to be in the cities often and don't get to go out enough. So these wonderful restaurants that I hear you talk so much about, I don't know so much about. But Rutgers Bay Lake Lodge, I mean, for me, again, atmosphere, experience, food. That's how I critique things. Rutgers Bay Lake Lodge, there's no place better than sitting on the deck at Rutgers on a summer afternoon over there. Bluefin Bay, Lake Superior, Tofty.
Awesome.
Same deal.
Yep.
Close to us in the metro, Pittsburgh Blue.
Yeah, they do it right, don't
unbelievable.
They? Unbelievable. Yeah.
I mean, Pittsburgh Blue Manny's, you know, that whole, they do it right. They do a really good job.
I can't wait to come up and visit.
I can't believe you haven't been there already. You've been hitting me up since August.
I know.
You haven't researched very well.
It's pretty bad. Every once in a while, we have a guest on that I haven't been to their place. And
can I get a commitment from you?
You can get a commitment. I'll pick a date after the show today. I will commit to a date today. I will.
We can't wait to have you.
Thank you so much for coming in. Go support. And boy, we're getting so many texts from people who love the Lonesome Pine, which is so nice.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable the support that we have all across the state. And we're so thankful and grateful. And that fuels us to continue to do what we do.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks for having us.
Josh is going to Jack's Cafe, one of my favorites tonight.
Yeah, Billy, can't wait to see you. Bourbon and Wagyu.
Very good. Thanks, Josh. 4:32 will break. Twins Ticket Tuesday. Listen to the sounder. When you hear the Win Twins sound effect, be caller 3 at 651-461-9226, and you will win a 4-pack of tickets to the Twins White Sox next Tuesday.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
the number one draft pick in the WNBA draft is getting paid about what an entry-level accountant would make graduating from college. Caitlin Clark, her base salary as a rookie in the WNBA will be $76,535. Do you want to guess what the first-round draft pick in the NBA will make in base salary? Caitlin Clark, $76,000. Number one draft pick for the NBA. I mean, you know it's at least $2 million, right?
At least.
$10.5 million. $10.5 million is the base salary for the NBA first-round draft pick. Is this unfair? So on first blush, you have to, like, your take has to be the same take that everybody, that all the sort of, you know-it-alls who are posting their, like, girl power post today, which is, this is outrageous. We have a long way to go.
Yeah, until the league becomes profitable.
Is it fair or is it unfair? 651-461-9226. The logical side of me can swallow the financial arguments, right? Like, well, the NBA makes $10 billion a year. The WNBA
doesn't.
Makes about $200 million. So the WNBA, at least up to this point, most teams are not turning a profit, or at least not a significant profit.
Yeah, the league as a whole is subsidized by the NBA.
So there are some logical factors here, right?
Right.
My question is, when you hear this, does the logic weigh out or does the emotion weigh out? Because the emotion on this it's pretty outrageous. It's pretty outrageous. $76,000. You know that Caitlin Clark is going to, I mean, think of the amount of money that the WNBA is going to make this coming year in ad revenue.
Yep.
Based on the fact that, you know, there are a number of superstars that people will be checking out. We've had this before, but we also, I don't think the media is interested, right? So you look at, right, like the Maya Moore era, and that was, I mean, there were tremendous athletes, tremendous stars. There was star power, but there was not TV viewing. And why is that? Well, I think some of that is because TV was sexist about it, that there was sort of preconceived notion that, like, well, no one's going to care to watch this. It's too much defense, not enough scoring. It's women. No one cares. Now, I think you can make an argument that we watch a lot of crap that we don't care about, but TV shoves it in our face, and then we start watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And so TV made a choice to downplay it. I think what we're going to see is TV making a choice to highlight it. Will that lead to more revenue, more audience? Probably. Probably.
It should. I mean, we were just during the break talking about last night was the WNBA draft, obviously. Which previously, last year, the article I read said that the draft drew about 500,000 viewers. That the record was the year Diana Taurasi got drafted, which was like 20 years ago. That was 600,000 was the record viewership for the WNBA draft.
Yeah.
Last night, 2.5 million people tuned in. So the numbers are moving, right? And pretty dramatically. And that's whatever this cultural moment is surrounding specifically Caitlin, but there are other stars as well. But let's just be honest. It's Caitlin that's driving this at this point.
Yes.
So what you're going to see is, you know, any game involving the Indiana Fever is going to have increased viewership. When they're on the road, they're going to sell. And obviously their games are going to sell out. But when they're on the road, they're going to sell out games. I think she's coming here. The Fever coming here, I think it was August, to play the Lynx.
Yeah.
That game will be packed to the rafters. So you're going to see movement in terms of revenue and in terms of interest. You know, we've seen it already in terms of the college game. That should translate to the pro game. And at that point, do you revisit salaries based on overall revenue? Yeah, then you absolutely do that. But you don't do it before you actually get that money in.
This is sort of the same dispute that you have about, you know, World Cup, sort of women's soccer versus men's soccer. And you've seen this. You've seen salaries in tennis, for example. And by salary, I mean, I guess it's more like the prize purse for winning Wimbledon. And a lot of those things have evened out. Now, I'm not feeling bad about, and one texter says, don't feel badly for Caitlin Clark. I don't feel badly for Caitlin Clark. She's going to make millions and millions of dollars in endorsements. She's going to be fine. It still seems wrong. Doesn't it seem wrong? I think it seems wrong. I know I'm not being logical about it. Dan is being, you are very clinical about
it. Well, because it's just.
And you're right. I think objectively you're right.
Yeah. I mean, look, I want women to make as much money as they can possibly make doing this. But the league also has to be somewhat financially viable. And there's only, you know, when MLS started, it very much was structured with low player salaries because they had to in order to get the thing off the ground. As it's grown, salaries have grown with it. Every sports league that's ever been has gone through something like this.
It's right? just been a long time. The WNBA has been around. Now, there are one thing that I often say when people complain that the WNBA doesn't get the same coverage that the NBA does is that the WNBA season is only, 40 games? And there are only 10 teams. And so it's not the same. One texter says the comparison is unfair to compare the WNBA to the NBA. They said you have to look at the revenue stream. It's maybe, you know, it's similar to like comparing women's hockey to NHL money, where you're like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't think twice about paying a PWHL player the same that you pay an NHL player.
Well, no one would make that argument that you should pay them the same.
Right.
But people do and are making that argument today about women's basketball.
Because they're making an emotional argument, not a logical one.
Lots of text coming in at 651-461-9226. WNBA does not draw, doesn't even come close to what the NBA draws in attendance. It's just business. If the women's league drew that much in attendance, it would definitely be equal. Maybe true.
Yeah, I mean, they do draw. It's not like nobody shows up to these games, but it's nowhere near.
Well, and the cost of, you know, running a league is not nothing.
Right. You know? I mean, you know, the overhead is fairly similar. There's some crossover, like with the Timberwolves being owned by the same, you know, the Lynx being owned by the same group as the Timberwolves. There's some crossover there, but still, you know, the overhead is the overhead, and, you know, the ticket gate is the ticket gate. Now, again, will that be going up very soon, very quickly? I would assume so. And then these conversations can be revisited.
It's still astonishing.
But it's still an equation.
So I think it is defensible, and it also is astonishing. In 2023, the average WNBA player made $113,000. The average NBA player made $9.7 million. It's astonishing. $113,000... To play now, you can say like, well, the WNBA is 40 games, the NBA is 82 games.
When you compare the revenue,
I get it.
I mean, it's not astonishing at all.
It's still astonishing. It's and it isn't the right. I suppose you could look at women's sports in general and say a WNBA player is probably the highest compensated, you know, team athlete in women's sports. Ultimately, all of the people who are outraged by this, the best way to fix it is to go to the games and buy a jersey and watch the games when they're on TV. But I'm sorry, it's still astonishing. It is that Caitlin Clark is making $76,000. That's astonishing. 4:49, back in just a minute here as we get you ready for Twins pregame. Those Twins players aren't making $76,000, I'll tell you that, here on CCO. Congratulations, David in Minneapolis, who just won that four-pack of tickets for the White Sox game next Tuesday. We thank Miller Marine and Power Lodge of St. Cloud, Bennington Pontoon's largest dealer. Don't forget, Tuesdays at Target Field, Dollar Dog Day. So you go to the Hennepin Grill on the Taste of Twins Territory concession stands, get that Dollar Dog, enjoy it. Twins baseball coming up here on CCO. Check the podcast. You know what? Dan, if we could do a two-hour show every day, like, this was pretty good.
You know, it was all right.
God, you're the worst. You are the worst. That is your bonus. I'm just crankling up and throwing at you. Here come the Twins.